Chapter 5. Bull. It's not in the budget, Michio Pa, executive officer of the behemoth, said. If she'd been an Earther, she would have been a small woman, but a lifetime in microgravity had changed her the way it did all of them. Her arms, legs, and spine were all slightly elongated. Not thin, exactly. Just put together differently. Her head was larger than it would have been, and walking in the mild 1/3 G thrust gravity, she stood as tall as Bull, but still seemed perversely childlike. It made him feel shorter than he was.
"We might need to adjust that," he said.
When they put in the railgun, they were treating it like we had standard bulkheads and supports. The thing is, the Mormons were really trying to cut back on mass. They used a lot of ceramics and silicates where the metals usually go. Directional stuff. We fire a round right now, we could shear the skin off. Pa walked down the long, curving corridor. The ceiling arched above her, white and easily twice as high as required, an aesthetic gesture by designers who hadn't known they were building a warship. Her stride a little wider than his, moving a little more comfortably in the low G and making him trot slightly to keep up. It was one of a thousand small ways Belters reminded Earthborn men and women that they didn't belong here. The XO shook her head. "We came out here with an operational plan," she said. "If we start rewriting it every time we find an adjustment we'd like to make, we might as well not have bothered." Privately, Bull thought the same thing, but with a different inflection. If he'd been XO, the operational plan would have been called a suggested guideline and only opened when he wanted a good laugh. Pa probably knew that. They reached the transit ramp, a softly sloping curve that led from the command and control levels at the head of the behemoth down to the massive drum of her body. From Pa's domain to his. "Look," Pa said, her mouth twitching into a conciliatory smile. "I'll make note of it for the refit, but I'm not going to start reallocating until I have an idea of the big picture. I mean, if I start pulling resources out of environmental control to cover this, and next week we find something that needs doing there, I'll just be pushing it back, right?" Bull looked down the ramp. Soft lights recessed in the walls filled the air with a shadowless glow like a cheesy vision of heaven. Pa put her hand on his shoulder. She probably meant it to be sympathetic, but it felt like condescension.
"Yeah, okay," he said.
"It'll be all right, Chief," she said, giving his trapezius a little squeeze. He nodded and walked down the ramp to the transfer platform. Her footsteps vanished behind him, submerging in the hum of air recyclers. Bull fought the urge to spit. The behemoth, back when she'd been the Nauvoo, had been built with a different life in mind. Most ships built for travel between the planets were like massive buildings, one floor above another with the thrust of the Epstein Drive at the bottom, providing the feeling of weight for whole voyages, apart from a few hours in the middle when the ship flipped around to change from acceleration to slowing down. But, Epstein or not, no ship could afford the power requirements or the heat generated by accelerating forever. Plus, Einstein had a thing or two to say about trying to move mass at relativistic speeds. The Nauvoo had been a generation ship, its journey measured in light years rather than light minutes. The percentage of its lifespan it could afford to spend under thrust was tiny by comparison. The command and control at the top of the ship, and the main engines and the associated parts of engineering at the bottom, could almost have belonged to a standard craft connected by a pair of kilometers-long shafts, one for a keel elevator to move people and another that gave access to the skin of the drum. Everything else was built to spin. For the centuries out to Tau Ceti, the body of the Nauvoo was meant to turn. 10 levels of environmental engineering, crew quarters, temples, schools, wastewater treatment, machine shops and forges, and at the center, the vast interior. It would have been a piece of earth curved back on itself. Soil and farmland and the illusion of open air, with a central core of fusion-driven light and heat as gentle and warm as a summer day. All the rooms and corridors in the body section, the vast majority of the ship, were built with that long, slow, endless season in mind. The brief periods of acceleration and deceleration at the journey's ends hardly mattered, except that they were all the ship had now. Those places that should have been floors were all walls, and would be forever. The vast reinforced decks meant to carry a tiny world's worth of soil were the sides of a nearly unusable well. Someone slipping from the connection where the command and control levels met the great chamber could fall for nearly 2 full kilometers. Water systems built to take advantage of spin gravity and Coriolis stood on their sides, useless. The Nauvoo had been a marvel of human optimism and engineering, a statement of faith in the twinned powers of God and rigorous engineering. The behemoth was a salvage job with mass accelerators strapped to her side that would do more damage to herself than to an enemy. And Bull wasn't even allowed to fix the problems he knew about. He passed through the transfer station and down toward his office. The rooms and corridors here were all built aslant, waiting for the spin gravity that would never come. Stretches of bare metal and exposed ducting spoke of the rush to finish it, and then to salvage and remake it. Just walking past them left Bull depressed. Samara Rosenberg, longtime repair honcho on Tycho Station and now chief engineer on the behemoth, was waiting in the anteroom, talking with Bull's new deputy. Serge, his name was, and Bull wasn't sure what he thought of the man. Serge had been part of the OPA before that was a safe thing to be. He had the traditional split-circle insignia tattooed on his neck, and wore it proudly. But, like the rest of the security force, he'd been recruited by Michio Pa, and Bull didn't know exactly how things stood. He didn't trust the man yet, and distrust kept him from thinking all that well of him. Sam, on the other hand, he liked. "Hey, Bull," she said as he dropped onto the foam core couch. "Did you get a chance to talk to the XO?"
"We talked," Bull said.
"What's the plan?" Sam said, folding her arms in a way that meant she already knew. Bull ran a hand through his hair. When he'd been younger, his hair had been soft. Now it was like he could feel each strand individually against his fingertips. He pulled out his hand terminal and scrolled through. There were 5 reports waiting. 3 routine security reports and 2 occasionals. An injury report and a larceny complaint. Nothing that couldn't wait.
"Hey, Serge," Bull said. "You hold the fort here for an hour?"
"Anything you want, Chief," Serge said with a grin. It was probably just paranoia that left Bull hearing contempt in the words.
"All right, then. Come on, Sam, I'll buy you a drink."
In a coalition ship, back when there'd been an Earth-Mars coalition, there would have been a commissary. In the OPA, there was a bar and a couple mom-and-pop restaurants, along with a bare-bones, keep-you-alive supply of pre-packed meals that anyone could get for the asking. The bar was in a wide space that might have been meant for a gymnasium or a ball court, big enough for 100 people, but Bull hadn't seen it with more than a couple dozen. The lighting had been swapped out for blue-and-white LEDs set behind sand-textured plastic. The tables were flat black and magnetized to hold the bulbs of beer and liquor to them. Nothing was served in glasses.
"Che-che," the bartender called as Bull and Sam stepped through the door. "Morgen! Alles messer you."
"Meya," Sam replied, as comfortable with the mishmash belter patois as Bull was with Spanish or English. It was her native tongue.
"What are you having?" Bull asked as he slid into one of the booths. He liked the ones where he could see the door. It was an old habit.
"I'm on duty," she said, sitting across from him. Bull leaned forward, catching the barkeep's eye, and held up 2 fingers.
"Lemonades," he said.
"Sasa,"
the barkeep replied, lifting a fist in the equivalent of a nod. Bull sat back and looked at Sam. She was a pretty enough woman, cute with pixie-cut hair and a quick smile. There had been about a minute when they'd first met that Bull had seriously considered whether he found her attractive. But if he'd seen the same calculus in her, they'd gotten past it. Didn't go so good? Sam asked.
No.
Sam lifted her eyebrows and leaned her elbows against the tabletop. He sketched out Pa's objections and rationale, and Sam's expression shifted slowly into a fatalistic amusement. Waiting for the refit's all well and good, she said when he was done. But if we try and test fire that bad boy, it's going to make an awfully big owie.
You sure about that?
Not 100%, she said. High 80s, though. Bull sighed out a tired obscenity as the barkeep brought the bulbs of lemonade. They were about the size of Bull's bald fists, citrus yellow, with Malisha Patiechi printed on the side in bright red script.
Maybe I should talk to her, Sam said. If it came straight from me.
It came straight from you, probably it would work, he said. And they get to tell me no on everything from now on. Bull asked for it? Well, if it was important, he'd have sent the belter, right?
You really think it's about you not getting born up here?
Yeah. Well, you're probably right, Sam said. Sorry about that.
Comes with the territory, Bull said, pretending that it didn't bother him.
Sam plucked her lemonade off the table and took a long, thoughtful drink. The bulb clicked when the magnet readhered to the tabletop.
I've got nothing against inners. Worked with a lot of you guys and didn't run into a higher percentage of assholes than when I'm dealing with belters. But I have to get that railgun's mounts reinforced. If there's a way to do that without undercutting you, I'm all for it.
But if it's that or mess up the ship, Bull said, nodding.
Give me a little time. I'll think of something.
Start when you want to shoot someone and count back 18 days, Sam said. That's my deadline. Even if everyone's sober and working balls out, my crew can't get it done faster than that.
I'll think of something, Bull said.
The larceny complaint turned out to be from a repair and maintenance crew who couldn't agree how to store their tools. The injury report was a kid who got caught between a stretch of deck plating and someone driving a salvage mech. The cartilage in the kid's knee had gotten ground into about a dozen different bits of custard. The medic said a good, clean bone break would have been better. The injured man would be fine, but he was off active duty for at least a month while all his pieces got glued back together. The security reports were boilerplate, which either meant that things were going well, or that the problems were getting glossed over. But probably they were going well. The trip out to the ring was a shakedown cruise, and that always meant there'd be a little honeymoon period when the crew were all figuratively standing shoulder to shoulder and taking on the work. Everyone expected there'd be problems, so there was a grace period when morale didn't start heading down. Chief security officer on an OPA ship was a half-assed kind of position, one part cop, one part efficiency expert, and pretty much all den mother to a crew of 1,000 people with their own agendas and petty power struggles and opinions on how he should be doing his job better. A good security chief kept bullshit off the captain's plate as a full-time job. The worst part, though, was that all Bull's formal duties were focused inward, on the ship. Right now, a flotilla of Earth ships was burning out into the deep night. A matching force of Martian war vessels, the remnants of the Navy that had survived two, let's not call them wars, was burning out on a converging path. The behemoth was lumbering along, too, with a head start that came from being farther from the sun and the hobble of low-G acceleration to keep her slow. And all of it was focused on the ring. Reports would be filling Captain Ashford's queue, and as his XO, Pa would be reading them, too. Bull had whatever scraps they let him have, or else the same mix of pablum and panic that filled the news feeds. Ashford and Pa would be in conference for most of their shifts, working over strategies and options and playing through scenarios for how things might go down when they reached the ring. Bull was going to worry about all the trivial stuff, so they didn't have to. And somehow, he was going to make the mission work, because Fred had asked him to.
Hey, Chief, Serge said.
Bull looked up from the terminal feed in his desk. Serge stood in the office doorway.
Shift's up and I'm out.
All right, Bull said. I still got some stuff. I can lock up when I'm done.
Bien, Alice, Serge said with a nod. His light, shuffling footsteps hissed through the front room. In the corridor, Gutmann's daughter stroked his white beard, and Casimir said something that made them both chuckle. Corin lifted her chin to Serge as he stepped out. The door closed behind him. When he was sure he was alone, Bull pulled up the operational plan and started hunting. He didn't have authority to change it, but that didn't mean he couldn't change anything. 2 hours later, when he was done, he turned off the screen and stood. The office was dark and colder than he liked it. The hum of the ventilation system comforted him. If it were ever completely silent, that would be the time to worry. He stretched, the vertebrae between his shoulder blades crunching like gravel. They would still be in the bar, most likely. Serge and Corin and Casimir. Macondo and Garza. So similar they could have been brothers. Jojo. His people, to the degree that they were his. He should go, be with them, make friends. He should go to his bunk. Come on, old man, he said. Time to get some rest. He had closed and locked the office door before Sam's voice came to him in his memory. Even if everyone's sober and working balls out, my crew can't get it done faster than that. He hesitated, his wide fingers over the keypad. It was late. He needed food and sleep and an hour or so checking in with the family aggregator his cousin had set up 3 years before to help everyone keep track of who was living where. He had a container of flash-frozen green chili from Hatch back on Earth waiting for him. It was all going to be there in the morning, and more besides. He didn't need to make more work for himself. No one was going to thank him for it. He went back in, turned his desk back on, and reread the injury report. Sam had a good laugh, one that came from the gut. It filled the machining bay, echoing off ceiling and walls until it sounded like there was a crowd of her. Two of the techs on the far side turned to look toward her, smiling without knowing what they were smiling about. "Technical support?" she said. "You've got to be kidding." "Railgun's a pretty technical piece of equipment," Bull said. "It needs support." "So you redefined what I do as technical support?" "Yeah." "That's never going to fly," she said. "Then get the job done quick," Bull said. "Ashford will pull you up for disciplinary action," she said, the amusement fading but not quite gone yet. "He has the right. But there's this other thing I wanted to talk about. You said something yesterday about how long it would take to do the job if everyone on your crew was sober." It was like turning off a light. The smile left Sam's face as if it had never been there. She crossed her arms. Tiny half-moon shapes dented in at the corners of her mouth, making her look older than she was. Bull nodded to her like she'd said something. "You've got techs coming to work high," he said. "Sometimes," she said, and then reluctantly. "Some of it's alcohol, but mostly it's pixie dust to make up for lack of sleep." "I got a report about a kid got his knee blown out. His blood was clean. But it doesn't look like anyone tested the guy who was driving the mech. Driver isn't even named in the report." "Weird, eh?" "If you say so," she said. Bull looked down at his feet, the gray and black service utility boots, the spotless floor. "I need a name, Sam." "You know I can't do that," she said. "These assholes are my crew. If I lose their respect, we're done here." "I won't bust your guys unless they're dealing." "You can't ask me to pick sides. And sorry for saying this, but you already don't have a lot of friends around here. You should be careful how you alienate people." Across the bay, the two technicians lifted a broken Mac onto a steel repair hoist. The murmur of their conversation was just the sound of words without the words themselves. If he couldn't hear them, Bull figured they couldn't hear him. "Yeah? So, Sam?" "Bull? I'm gonna need you to pick sides." He watched her vacillate. It only took a few seconds. Then she looked across the bay.
The technicians had the mech open, pulling an electric motor out of its spine. It was smaller than a six-pack of beer and built to put out enough torque to rip steel. Not the sort of thing to play with drunk. Sam followed his gaze and his train of thought. For a guy who bends so many rules, you can be pretty fucking uncompromising. Strong believer in doing what needs to get done. It took her another minute, but she gave him a name.